Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 131 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of the first leg of the round of 16 in the Champions League. Feyenoord-Inter, which finished 2-0 to the visitors. Goals from Marcus Thuram in the 38th minute and Lautaro Martinez, who becomes Inter's all-time leading goal scorer in the Champions League in the 50th minute. As always, I am one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here today, special guest, Nima Tavali-Ruzzari. Nima, thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk with you. I wish Johnny was here, so I could annoy him.
As do we all. As do we all.
So I could annoy him. Well. I'm just wanted to tell everyone who's watching this and not just listening. I'm checking my phone because I'm kind of covering post match interviews as well, because we're recording this immediately after the game, and I really want to hear what Inzaghi has to say about his decision of that penalty, because it's genuinely one of the most idiotic, asinine decisions I've seen a manager make ever, if he is the one who decided Zielinski to take it. So I don't want to say anything. I want to wait and see if he says something, and then we need to talk about it, because it is genuinely one of the most flabbergasting, dumb, low IQ decisions I've seen a manager make at this level, without a doubt.
Simone. Wow, catching strays.
Everybody who knows me knows that, listen, before I have a bunch of R's coming at me about how I hate Inzaghi, let me just tell you that I've been watching him since Lazio, and I wanted him at Inter since 2017. The column I wrote calling him the next Italian super coach back in 2017, when most people had no fucking idea who he was. So can we cut that shit out? No, this was a dumb ass decision. And if it was his, but it looked like it, he made seven finger, looked like it was his decision. If it's his decision, I want to know what he was thinking, because it might just be one of the dumbest decisions I've seen a manager make. It mind boggles, boggling. The tie could be over. He could have had his striker, confidence up. Let me just say it out loud. If it is his decision that Zielinski should take it, the fourth midfielder, when he has his third striker, who's been criticized correctly for not scoring, who has already taken two penalties for you in the Champions League, and you made the same, you made a similar mistake when Arnautovic took the penalty, because they have the same conversion rate, even though Taremi has scored about three times as many penalties as Arnautovic in his career for club and country. You have a striker, not a midfielder, a striker whose confidence is shot to shit. You want to get it up. Everybody knows that the best way to get a striker's confidence up is to have him scoring. He comes on with his first goal, touch of the ball, he could have scored. Instead, you take your fourth midfielder and you give it to him. I'm sorry, Ale, but this is genuinely stupid. This is dumb. This is dumb. This is low IQ decision making, if it is that. And I think it is, because he wants to protect Taremi. You know, I don't want you to take the first penalty when you come off the bench, blah, blah. All that superstitious bullshit that you hear from footballers. I'm sorry. It's just, oh, I'm so annoyed. That annoyed me to no end.
I mean, it is annoying given the opportunity to go 3-0 up in the tie in the first leg, which for all intents and purposes would definitely put it away.
But it's also because you have a striker. He's one of your strikers. You need your strikers in the business end of the season to score. That's good for them, right? And you have a striker who hasn't scored. He's had trouble with his confidence. This would have killed that. This would have fixed that. Not all the way, but it would have helped him. So instead, you let your fourth midfielder take. This shit like this that makes me is mind boggling. It's flabbergastingly insane and unnecessary too, completely unnecessary. I mean, it would have been over. It would have been finished. I mean, if there's one thing Taremi has done well at Inter, it's to shoot penalties and take penalties. I mean, it's dumb, but. Anyway, I'm sorry, but dumb shit like that pisses
hot
me off.
Hot out the gate.
I'm all sorry, right, but shit like that really pisses me off. Like, it's not even that it's about Taremi. It's about you need your strikers. Thuram, Lautaro, we know physically the problems they had. You need your strikers firing, right? So maybe give them a shot to...
Zielinski did put away two penalties against Juventus. Yeah.
But he's a midfielder. He's not a striker. And
I bring it up because it might be weighing on Inzaghi's mind. Like, he has, both players have put away penalties for Inter this year. It does seem, when Taremi came into the game, when the sub was first made before the penalty, the first thought that I had was he's getting subbed on to take the penalty. Because at that point, like, there's no Chala on the pitch. The only people were Lautaro and Zielinski. So I thought, okay, why is Taremi entering the game at this point? It's probably to take the penalty. So I was surprised.
Everyone was thinking it, Ale, because that's the logical thing that you think. Because you bring your striker on who has struggled with his goal scoring. You know that he's a good penalty taker. He has taken penalties for you. He's taken penalties for club and country for the last 7 years. He's got an 80% conversion rate. I think we're talking somewhere around 30, 40, 50 penalties scored. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, also, it's an open goal. This is not a hard decision to make. This is not a difficult decision to make. Like, do you really need Zielinski scoring?
When he walked up to take the penalty, I didn't feel nervous at all, because, like, I expected Zielinski to put it away. I've watched him do it before, and you know that he can do it. So I wasn't particularly nervous, and obviously, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But let's get into this later once we get some quotes from Inzaghi, because for sure he's
scored gonna get asked 59 about it. Penalties between club and country, Taremi, in his career. He's missed 10.
He's missed 10.
I mean, that's literally the only thing he's good at right now, and you take that away from him. I mean, just, what's the point? He might as well just go home to Iran. At this point, send Taremi home to Iran. Why is he even there? What's the point? What's the point? It's a complete waste of everyone's time. You might as well go home to Tehran, and it's Eid Nowruz, our Iranian New Year's coming up. It's beautiful. You got this. The flowers are all coming out. It's beautiful. Why should he be here? It's a waste of everyone's time. Ah, God. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Let's see what Inzaghi says and get into some of the other things that happened today besides an Iranian... not getting a penalty opportunity.
Scored. 59 penalties scored. Like,
well, unfortunately for you, there were 90 other minutes that we got to talk about. So
yeah, let's do it.
Let's get into it. Where I want to start with is, let's pretend that you didn't see what you just saw as far as the 90 minutes, right? And someone just handed you a box score that said Inter is going to secure the first leg 2-0. What would be your initial reaction?
I'd bite your hand off. Like, I don't think anyone would say anything but that, because where we are, yeah. I mean, I think what Inzaghi and Marotta and everyone has been, De Frey, everyone who's spoken has said it, that we're in a crisis. And everyone knows that Inter are in a crisis. You got so many injuries. You barely have a fit wide player. You know, right now is survival mode until the end of the international break. So you're lucky that you've got two Feyenoord games and Monza. Just get through those. Try to win. Try to win the Atalanta game if you can, and then, you know, reconvene in April and see where you are when the players are fit.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific result. Like, two goals at home when hopefully you'll be getting a little bit fitter. That's a tie that you have to feel really confident that you can close out. Sour feelings come from it. So if I handed you that box score, I handed you that sheet after the game, but I left off that a penalty was missed, you'd say, terrific result.
But I'd bite your hand off.
You know, if you are able to know that a penalty was missed at some point, and when you look at the context of the game...
It's for me, it's not so much the... I got to be honest. It's not even the penalty being missed, because 2-0... Inter have got this. I mean, it would take a historic collapse of biblical proportions for Inter to fuck this up at San Siro. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, first minute penalty, red card. Do you know what I mean? Like, something like that. ginormous.
I'm knocking on wood because of what you just said.
Yeah, no, but you know what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Knock on wood. Me, yeah. I'm knocking on wood too. But like, so this is not that. It's just the thing that annoyed me is that everything we've heard the last few weeks, Auxilio came out and talked about it. His stats are particular, are a bit strange, you know, but he works hard, his confidence, blah, blah, blah. You have a golden opportunity to address that, and then you decide that you don't want to. I don't know. But yeah, to talk to your point about results, this is a fantastic result. At this point of the season, the performances don't matter. At this point, like, performances are what you need to build up from September to January so that you can rely on them when your dip in form is, so that you know you've got that game in the back of your, like, you know, just with you at all times, that you know what,
yep.
When you don't have that in March and you've not had that all season, then you just, it's survival mode, especially when you're in injury. We got this injury crisis. At this point, I don't care how it looks. I just want the results. And I got to be honest with you. I thought Inter played better than I expected, if I'm perfectly honest. I thought they absorbed.
That second half was much better. Yeah.
Yeah, but the first half as well. I thought they absorbed Feyenoord's pressure. And I don't think Feyenoord created anything. I think they had an XG of 0.1 in the first half.
The only real chance I can remember is, I forget who was out on the name is escaping me, who was out on the left wing that got past Pavard and drove a low shot to Josep Martinez's right, where he just put it out for the corner. That's the only one that I can remember that felt worrisome. But outside of that,
nothing. No, I think Inter absorbed them really well. I like to see Acerbi. And I think we need to talk about him because he's such an intelligent player, such a high football IQ, and a leader in that squad. And I think that's going to be one of the it wouldn't surprise me if he stays fit and De Vrij stays fit and they continue to play this well. I wouldn't be surprised if both of them stay for another season, because, which is, you know, you can, whatever you want to think about that. But, and I'm kind of on the fence on that when it comes to Acerbi too, but that kind of leadership, that kind of experience, that kind of high IQ that he did display tonight, that doesn't grow on trees. You have to remember that too. That doesn't grow on trees. Because I know that he's not the quickest guy on earth at his age, but the right, making the overlap runs in the right time, leading by example, working hard, dropping deep. I mean, he is a leader in that squad, and he shows it. Inter, he literally is the dad. When he's on the pitch, it's like everyone gets their shit together. They concentrate better. It feels calm in defense. He's got that presence to him, and you can't buy that. Like, you can't, that doesn't grow on trees. That is, I mean, you saw today Bastoni looked so much more relaxed when he had Acerbi next to him, which we haven't seen pretty much all season. It's been a little bit nervy, but tonight I was really impressed. Now you got to give it to hand it to Acerbi. Like, he does offer something. He does.
I feel like that what you're talking about with Acerbi as far as the experience is concerned, a lot of football Twitter accounts were talking about the average ages of the squads in the Champions League.
And it's high.
Sitting there, it's the highest in the Champions League. I believe it's at 30 Absolutely. Years old or 29. And you kind of saw that play out in this game today, where you don't have the legs to go at them sprint for 90 minutes. So you absorbed what you could, right? They gassed themselves out. And then you were able to maturely, you know, just manage the game.
Yeah.
Take advantage of opportunities. Yeah.
I agree. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But look, of course, Tony on Twitter, who me and him have been talking about this for quite some time, and we were annoyed. The only thing we were annoyed with our Mercato last summer was that we didn't do anything in defense, because we thought that it's better to be proactive than reactive. So I agree with what he said. That's my opinion. It's been my opinion since last summer. But having said that, there is a flip side to this. And that is, experience like that and leadership like that, it's very hard to come by. And if he continues to play at this level, because I think he's been so good since he came back from his injury. I think you could actually make a case that he's consistently been Inter's best player since coming back from his injury. And he leads by example. Like, that's an intangible that you can't buy. You either have a player in that in your squad or you don't. Do I think that there are other areas more important to invest in than that position right now, given where we are in March? Yeah, I think the midfield and attack needs to be resolved. I think the Correa, Arnautovic, Taremi, Fratesi, Aslani wing-back situation to a certain extent, but lesser extent. But yeah, those that I mentioned are more important. If Acerbi and De Frey are going to play like this and you have them under contract for another year, what's more pressing? You know what I mean?
Well, depending on how far they're able to get in this competition, how far they're able to get in the Club World Cup, plus with Marotta's comments before the game, you know, talking about how present Oaktree has been and they prefer to work in silence and they're going to make investments. You hope that you're able to address everywhere. Between them actually investing to whatever sort of plusvalenza you're able to get from selling players this summer, I'm hoping that they can make it work and really rejuvenate every area of the squad, although that is a little optimistic.
Can I just say something about what he said? I want people to be a little bit careful there and not get their hopes up about the investment. Investment isn't just in the playing squad. Investment is also what they're doing with Milan to buy the San Siro. That is a huge investment. Let's not forget that. Buying the San Siro, taking over ownership of it, investing hundreds of millions of euros or dollars in rebuilding, refurbishing a state-of-the-art stadium, that's an important investment. We have to remember that. That can also be what he refers to.
Yeah.
I think we should just remember that, because I don't want people to get their hopes up and then think that, just remember this. This is an important, stick a pin in that and remember that for the summer.
But it is important for the long-term health. It's critical for the long-term health of the squad to be able to have your own stadium. So it's a worthwhile investment. That shouldn't be, something that Interisti are upset that he came out and said.
Yeah.
All right. Back to this game a little bit here. Your thoughts on how Inzaghi chose to line up today with both Aslani and Bastoni playing out left at the left wing back position, sort of a hybrid role that rotated between a 4-4-2, 3-5-2, and then Pavard over Bissek. Those were the big selections that he made. Thoughts on how that worked out? Obviously, it worked out well, but would you have gone with a different strategy?
I gotta say, I actually liked the lineup today. I think if you're gonna play Aslani, you need Barella and Zielinski next to him, because between Barella and Zielinski, you have two incredibly technically gifted players. You have two very press resistant players. You have two very dynamic players. And I think with the quality and experience they have, they free up space and time for Aslani, which he needs at this point. So I actually thought it was a really good decision to play those three together. I was happy he rested Mkhitaryan, because I think Mkhitaryan, Mkhitaryan doesn't have the dynamism anymore next to Aslani. And if you've got Aslani and Mkhitaryan on, then essentially you've got two players who are not very dynamic. So I actually liked it. I liked, and Dumfries as well, we know he has the legs. I mean, if there's anything Dumfries has, it is intensity and pace and willpower and, physique. And Bastoni and Acerbi, I liked this. I liked how they played. I thought Bastoni was the man of the match, and I think UEFA gave him the man of the match award.
Otto said it in the post-match as well.
Okay. So I thought Bastoni was outstanding, and I really liked how they swapped sides. I mean, that's what Di Marco and Bastoni used to do, but haven't done this season for reasons I don't understand. Hopefully they can do it now. But yeah, it's moving forward. I liked it. My only question was, Thuram and Lautaro, isn't it time to rest Thuram? But it looks like Thuram is on those.
He did one not of, look good coming off the pitch.
No,
in conversation with Inzaghi, that was it. It worried me more than it assured me.
Yeah, I think it's time to rest Thuram for two games. If you can rest him against Feyenoord and Monza, and play him against Atalanta, you do that. I think it's time to do that. But I'm glad that he scored. It was important that he scored. Because he hasn't scored in a long time.
Good finish.
Yeah, it was a that goal was beautiful. The way it was worked from Aslani to Dumfries, dropping it to Barella at the right time, that wonderful cross, that one. I mean, it was a wonderfully team goal, well worked, with lots of individual quality in every decisive moment. I really liked it. I really enjoyed that. No, I was okay. I'm happy with today. I got to be honest with you. I know a lot of people are unhappy with the performance, but look, for me, like I've said, for me, performance matters up until, because when you're in the preliminary stages of the season, where you're trying to build up some sort of momentum and lay the narrative for your season, and also to build up and show that you can turn on the style and that you have like this autopilot you can go on in the difficult moments. In March is not when you want performance. In March, April, May, you want results. That's all you want. Because it's too late. If the performances haven't come by March, that you just got to grind it out at that point, you know. So I was happy. I'm happy with today. I'm happy with the performance. I'm happy with the result. I'm not happy with the performance. I'm happy with the result. I'm happy with the way that Inter took on this game. I'm happy with the way that they approached it. That stadium is not an easy place to go to. I don't know if you guys watched
it. Milan. Was boiling. Absolutely, it is.
It's
boiling.
A boiling atmosphere, De Kuip, and I mean, it got to Milan in that game because the crowd was all over them, on top of them. But Inter didn't allow that to happen. They were so calm, composed. Okay, in the final third, they're not playing champagne football. We know that. This is the Inter. I've accepted. I've moved on from that. Right. At this point, I just want the results to be grinded out, and then everything else is secondary. Right now, yeah.
Yeah, and the timing of Thuram's goal too, after 35 minutes of, you're basically almost at the end of the half. You've absorbed their pressure for so long, and then your first real string it together movement in the attacking third, you're able to put the ball in the back of the net. So it was huge to get that goal heading into halftime. What did you make of the refereeing today? There were a couple decisions that the crowd felt more into than if you look at the actual video. It wasn't even close on several occasions. But what did you make of the refereeing, which I think has been poor for Inter in recent matches?
I think this was the VAR stepped in and gave a penalty, which the Serie A in exactly the same situations has not. So I think that it was good to see that the VA they actually did their jobs. That is a penalty. He's nowhere near the ball. He kicks him from behind, so that's a penalty. But overall, I thought my issue with referees right now is that I think that it's been, this season has shown in most leagues and in the Champions League, that there's lots of confusion with regards to the VAR protocol. There's lots of confusion with regards to what the handball rule is. There's lots of confusion within refereeing circles, apparently, the way that they judge them, situations. And I think that needs to be clarified, that this is an organizational thing. I think IFAB needs to clarify what it wants from the referees, because I get the sense that watching these many games as I do and watching the referees and how they act, I feel they're just more confused. They don't know, because certain things are so similar, and then one thing gives a penalty, one thing doesn't, and it's like the identical situations, and you're thinking, what's going on? I understand that different leagues have different standards of physicality and whatnot, but this isn't about that. This is more confusion. They seem confused more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was in perfect position to see that the Ueda penalty was not a penalty, that he had taken a bit of a knock from De Vrij, but then he recovered and then decided to throw himself on the ground. The thing that I had the biggest issue with was Mitchell probably should have gotten sent off a second yellow card for that tackle on Bastoni in the second half, but ultimately it, it doesn't matter. I want to talk about Lautaro quickly as well. Zielinski gets an assist, lays it off for Lauti, who I thought had a terrific finish. Now the all-time leading goal scorer for Inter in the Champions League. He comes up big when we need him. He's done that on several occasions. This has been one of the more difficult seasons that he's had. What's your overall stance on Lautaro's season to date?
It's been a weird season, hasn't it? It's been a... He's been... I give him a long leash because of the fact that he has played an obscene amount of games in the last 3 years. And he's just a human being. Yes, he's a top athlete, but he's still just a human being. And the if you think about it, since COVID, World Cup, okay, he didn't have a protagonist role at the World Cup, but he was still there, and he was there all the way to the end. All the way to the Champions League final. Two Copa Americas, all going all the distance, playing 60 games with Inter. Like, he and Barella are tired. Like, it's and they're not going to get any rest either. Like, because you got the Club World Cup coming up, and I'm seeing reports that the winner gets 100 million euros, so Inter are definitely going to go in for that. They need the money. So,
yeah.
And
so they can buy a replacement for their
corpses. They can buy, yeah, and then you've got the shortest preseason ever, because then you have these guys aren't going to get much rest. And then you have the World Cup the following year. I mean, the summer of 2026, Barella, I hope none of them gets injured. I'm praying they get past that World Cup and they don't get injured, and then they get like a proper rest. I hope Inter at that point gives them a month off in the summer of 26, like tells them, you both take a month off, because they need it, both of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to, like, they are so close to being burned out, and you don't come back from that easily, you know? And I think with Lautaro, it is just burnout. It's physical burnout. I don't think it's a qualitative
decline. It's different. Yeah. It's different. His droughts this year, you know, he obviously took a while to get into the shape that he needed to be in, and then he went off, and then, you know, recent struggles, it's just he's got a lot of minutes on his leg. So it was good to see him put one in the back of the net today. Again, I think it's huge that both of your strikers can get on the score sheet. That rarely ever happens for Inter. I think the last time we saw it was Empoli in January. So you know, just terrific to see them be able to both put one in the back of the net. All right, your least favorite performance from the Inter side today.
Which player? I don't know. I thought they were. I don't know. I don't think there was anyone who was particularly awful, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah. I didn't think it was. I thought it was a very, like, level, if you know what I mean. I think there were some players who were better than others. But
yeah, I have a player that definitely let me down. Who? And it was Zielinski. I thought that first half was horrendous. Could not keep control of the ball, constantly giving the ball away. Rebounded in the second half, definitely looked better. But, you know, like we were talking about at the top of the pod, big opportunity to just completely and totally kill the tie and maybe save some of your teammates some minutes. And unable to convert. In fairness, it was a great save by the keeper, but yeah, if you're going to step up there, you know, obviously the expectation is that you're able to capitalize.
100%. That's a fair thing to say. I think that's a fair thing to say with Zielinski, because he has been underwhelming, hasn't he? I mean, let's be honest, he has been underwhelming since joining. But I don't know, man. I don't think he was awful. I just felt that the way that the game looked and the way that Inter's game plan was to kind of, it doesn't suit him to be the kind of work without possession, absorb pressure kind of a guy, if that makes sense. He's a guy who wants the ball at his feet. I don't think the game suited him that much. But having said that, yeah, I mean, he didn't have a great first half. But I still didn't think he was awful, if that makes sense. I mean, I thought none of them were outstanding, but I didn't think he was bad. Then I think they kind of got their goal. They got the game where they wanted. And in the second half, I feel that it just became natural. The more tired Feyenoord got, that Inter took over more and controlled the game more. And, you know, he got the assist for Lautaro's goal, which was a very good goal. And I mean, Lautaro's now talking about staying at Inter for his entire career. So, you know, now and I think he's very happy about that. I mean, I don't think it will take something serious to get Lautaro away from Inter now. I think he's part of Inter history now, you know, yeah. And I don't think he wants to leave.
It would be incredibly difficult for Interisti to picture him in a different kit. That's for sure. Would be very weird. All right, last question about this first leg, and then we'll move into some questions from the fans and get out of here. Quick episode, since I know you've got a lot to head into tonight. The Italian media, how do you expect they will react to this performance from Inter? There's been a lot of conversation. Di Canio, Capello, everyone talking about how this Inter squad no longer dominates, and they don't. That wasn't the case today. But ultimately, do you think they will side with the fact that this was a mature performance and they got the result that they needed? Or will there be more criticism for a squad that ultimately is top of the league, had a great result in the first leg, still alive in the Coppa Italia, and so forth?
There's definitely going to be criticism. I'm counting on that, because and I'm glad that they do, because I got to be honest with you, one thing that I have thought was very positive these last few weeks, and I said it on our pod, on the Italian Football Podcast, on the Q&A for patrons today only, when someone asked me say something positive about each of the top teams in the Serie A, and my thing for Inter is, I am very, very happy about the growth and the manner in which Simone Inzaghi has improved and grown as a communicator, as the coach of Inter, as the boss at Inter. He's much more comfortable in that role. He's much more comfortable talking with the media about Inter, pushing back aggressively. He doesn't come across whiny or weak. He comes across as assertive, confident, and someone who has the group firmly united behind him.
And firmly. Willing to defend the team. Yeah.
I'm glad that they talk shit about Inter. I think this is exactly how I wanted to have it. Sorry, let me rephrase that. I don't think it's talking shit. I think it's criticism. I don't think anything they're saying, that's their jobs as pundits and analysts to critically analyze all the teams. I don't think anything they've said that Capello and Costa Curta and Bergomi and Di Canio have said about Inter has been off the mark or unfair. I don't think it has. I don't listen to what Cassano says because I think he's an idiot, other than just laughing at him. So whenever he just chats shit, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, he's a carnival barker. Let him just, you know, whatever. So yeah. I don't consider him a serious pundit, but the ones that I do, that everyone listens to, look, Di Canio's analysis, Bergomi's analysis, Marchegiani, Costa Curta, Bucciantini, these guys are really good at their jobs. And I think everything they say is true. And it's interesting to listen to, and you learn from it. You don't, you know, I'm glad that they criticize Inter, because I think Inter need to hear it. And if that keeps them on their toes, and if Inzaghi can channel it the right way, which I think he does and has, that's great. Keep doing it. You know, I think it's a good thing. Of course, there's going to be criticism because, you know, we've seen, you know, the problem is that when you've seen what this team can do and play like, and the level that they can play like, and today they scored their first goal from open play in five games or in four games. This was the fifth game. You're going to get criticized, and you deserve to be criticized, right? Especially with the season you've had in terms of how you played. But that's not a bad thing. I think that's a good thing.
Heading into Monza this weekend, obviously the fixture is at home. Still 1 point above Napoli, but you know, this is a must win. You have to take points against these lower table sides. Your expectation regarding rotation?
Yeah, I expect to see quite a bit of rotation. I expect Çalhanoğlu probably to start on Sunday, because I expect Çalhanoğlu to start against Atalanta. I probably expect Barella to start, and Mkhitaryan to start. I expect Thuram to be rested for the next two games.
Is that the best way to manage him? Like, instead of giving him the game from the start, just like let him get the last 30 minutes, because it does look very, very awkward out there for him. He can't hit top gear.
No. Well, I think with him, he needs to, I don't know. I mean, obviously, since I don't, you know, they do their physical tests and they got the numbers and they know where these guys are physically, it's impossible to say. If it is a situation where he's coming back from injury, I'd rather rest him. If it's a situation where he's tired and, you know, they want to get him his physical. Yeah, exactly. Then it depends. It's a difficult one. I don't have the information, so I can't say, but all I will say is that if he is injured, I'd rather rest him for a week and a half even. I wouldn't play him a minute if I didn't need to against Monza, and I sure as hell wouldn't play him a minute against Feyenoord next week on Tuesday either. I'd rest him all the way to the Atalanta game.
If Augusto is not able to recover in time, are you throwing Bastoni back out there on the left?
I'd play Bastoni. Formation? I'd probably, you know, again, I would play the players that I want to play against Atalanta. I'd play against Monza and I'd rest them against Feyenoord, essentially, because I think it's important to get the rotation right. Atalanta is very important. Feyenoord should be an easy, like, that should be over now. I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure they'll be switched on, but I don't expect Feyenoord to come to the San Siro and win 3-0. Like, that would be insane. So I'd probably start Lautaro, Taremi, or Lautaro, Arnautovic, Lautaro, Correa, whatever. But I'd take Lautaro off in the 50th, 60th minute and rest him. And then I would not play him against Feyenoord, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. How many goals has Lautaro scored this season in the Champions League? He's there about at the top of the goal scorers, right?
I believe it was 6, but I could be...
Yeah, I think you might be right. 6 or 7. I think so.
How do you do this? Oh, here we go. Champions League. 6 goals, yep.
Yeah, and that's... Box. Who's topping that?
The Champions League charts right now are...
Yeah, it's Gyurassi.
Gyurassi.
However you pronounce it, 10. Yeah.
Yep. So probably not going to catch him, but still a great tally.
Yeah, 6 is good. 6 is good. You're 4 off the top.
We're a team that spreads it out anyway. And it's not like we've had a ton of goals in the Champions League to begin with, so.
No, we haven't. I like that he's on. Like, for him to score his 6th, I think it's important. He's 1 behind Mbappe and Alvarez and Kane and Vinny. He's 2 behind Haaland. 3 behind Lewandowski. Like, he's going to get his chances to score more. And I'm glad that he's actually having been prolific in the Champions League. Kane got
on the score sheet today as well.
Yeah. No, it's important. I like that. I think I would probably play, if I could, play him for 60 minutes against Monza, then I'd rest him if I could for the whole game against Feyenoord. But if need be, bring it on the last 15 minutes just to keep him going, like 10 minutes, nothing too crazy. If he can score a goal there, that's, or one or two there in 10, 15 minutes, that's, you know, just to keep him kind of happy and going.
Yeah.
But I love the finish tonight. That's how Lautaro finishes when he's at his best.
Yeah.
He doesn't overwork it. He's relaxed in his body. The thing about Lautaro is you really can tell where he is. He's not physically, like mentally, in his movement of his body. You can tell immediately if he's in form. When he's in form, he's got this kind of silky, relaxed movement pattern. He doesn't get all tensed up. When he's not informed, he gets tensed up. And tonight he looked really, really like relaxed. And that's a good sign. And that's how I liked it. I like when Lautaro is relaxed.
Yeah, it's he's key to this team. And it's just the minutes. Yeah, it's not just the minutes that we need him to eat. We also need him to be productive, and enjoying his time out there. So, all right, we don't have a ton of great questions here. So let me just end this with an inquiry on who you think Inter would face in the next round if they're able to get past Feyenoord.
Well, they've got
Bayern or Bayer.
Yeah, Bayern or Bayern München or Bayer Leverkusen.
So who do you think?
It's who I think suits Inter more. I mean, look, I've not been impressed by Bayern München at all this season. But Bayern Munich in a quarterfinal, you know, they grow with the task. And if I can say goodbye to Bayern Munich and have to play Bayer Leverkusen, a team that Inter, you know, have already played, so they know what to expect, of course I pick Bayer Leverkusen, because I actually think Inter were unlucky to lose that game. They didn't do well in attack, 100%. But they were defensively perfect in that game. That goal was
away
offside.
From home.
Yeah. So I would probably pick Bayer Leverkusen to play.
Yeah, I feel good either way, honestly. I think Leverkusen is a team that we're primed to get revenge. I know Inzaghi is going to be very, very hot to figure out the answer to that problem. But with Bayern, I don't know if you saw their recent game against Stuttgart. They can get beat over the top. They can get countered pretty easily. Stuttgart should have had 3 or 4 goals in that game. So
yeah.
Either way, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
No, I agree. Look, if we can choose, look, again, it's like with Real Madrid, some teams you just want them eliminated as soon as possible because they grow with the task. Bayern Munich, the Real Madrids, you want them out as soon as possible, you know, because when it comes to semi-final, quarter-final, final time, I don't want to be facing them, yeah. You know, because they have that kind of thing about them where they can just go in and win the whole damn thing and they don't deserve to win it, you know, like you're just standing there going, damn it. So if I can get them out as soon as possible, I will. I'll take that any day of the week.
So much football history there.
Yeah, and also that Bayern squad is good. Like, as much as I don't rate Vance Kompany as a manager, the players on the pitch are good. Like, they are good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a quality team. I mean, it really is. So I'd like to avoid them as much as I can.
Yeah, I concur. I think I'm looking forward to hopefully getting a Leverkusen matchup. Okay.
Yeah. No, because Leverkusen and Inter know what to expect, and they won't be like underestimating them, and they'll be pretty annoyed because Inzaghi still harps on about that goal that they lost. It's like it's annoyed them. Everyone at Inter is like really annoyed every time they've spoken about it. So yeah,
they also took on their, I believe it was their starting 11
with
our reserves. So I don't. You know, I don't know that we're necessarily scared of that kind of challenge.
No. No, agreed.
Alrighty. Where can the people find you next, Nima?
Well, yeah, they can find, well, for all Inter news, sempreinter.com. If they want to listen to this podcast, they go on sempreinter or interviews. And if they want to listen to the Italian football podcast, they go where podcasts are and look for the Italian Football Podcast on YouTube as well at itafootpod. And if they want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/tifp. So it's all there.
Thank you so much for joining. Appreciate you being able to do this immediately after the match. And in the words of the great... Oh, wait. No. Should we give you an opportunity to do a quick little tribute for a legend of Calcio that we lost today? Just let the people know. Maybe they're for the younger listeners that aren't familiar with what kind of a loss this really is.
Bruno Pizzul was the voice of Italian football for a generation. As really no, it's not even hyperbolic. It's no exaggeration. He was the voice of Italian football for 15, 20 years. And he was unbelievably professional, unbelievably eloquent, unbelievably elegant in how he commentated on games. His ability to convey emotion, his ability to convey things in a calm, coherent, and professional manner. You know, he's given Italian football fans, Italian-speaking Italian football fans, so many eternal quotes and lines from matches. I mean, for me, his characteristic voice, joyously shouting "Schillaci" in 1990 in Rome. At the backdrop of that magical summer, those magical summer nights in Rome, where the entire Stadio Olimpico was covered in the tricolore, and Schillaci, from Sicily, barely having played any games for Italy, coming on as a super sub and having that summer. It's as if Pizzul and Schillaci, you can't have one without the other. They go together. That summer, it's the summer of Schillaci and Bruno Pizzul. And from that, you know, the World Cup 94, listening to him when Italy were on the verge of getting knocked out, and he kind of almost saying that Italy got knocked out, and then Baggio does that against Nigeria. You know, those comments, that line. Or, you know, going to the World Cup in 98 in France, you know, his stoic "è finita" when Luigi Di Biagio hits the crossbar, his commentating when Ronaldo scored that goal for Inter. And I mean, it's just, we're talking 25 years of people, myself included, when I heard his voice, when I hear these lines, I'm taken back to my childhood. I'm taken back. I remember where I was. I can smell, you know, I know where I was. I can smell the air of the summer in 94 that night or that afternoon. I can taste being in Florence with an ice cream at watching Italy against France, a gelato in hand in a giant park, Maxi Schermo, listening to Bruno Pizzul with thousands of other people. It's, we lost a great one today.
I have chills. Every hair in my body is standing up right now. That was beautiful. And obviously super iconic, and there's a lot of quotes coming out. I think, you know, you mentioned Schillaci. I think he's definitely also synonymous with Baggio. And Baggio had a pretty beautiful tribute to him as well. So rest in peace, Bruno Pizzul. It's beautiful. All right. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi. We'll be right back.